So this is really the fundamental point of tonight's lesson. See, the function of the soul is not to live some kind of ethereal existence. The function of the soul is not to be to live in this kind of spiritual detached reality. On the contrary, its entire purpose is to refine existence through its interaction with the physical. That is the purpose of this godly soul that we have within it. And the reason why the body was first created from the earth is because when you start the process of refining, especially when it comes to spiritual refinement, you begin at the very lowest level and you move your way up. So the human was created from the very dust, from the very earth, the lowest inanimate object possible. And then, and only then, was the soul infused in order to enable the soul to begin from the bottom up. And when we talk about spiritual refinement, the soul is first charged with refining its own body, its own container that it finds itself in. And then it moves outward. It refines and works with people in close proximity. And then a little further. And then even for some special people, they have the ability to affect the entire world. Every once in a while we come across those kinds of special people that are able to refine the world and bring both their own body and the entire world to fulfillment. So this is the purpose of the soul. To make the world a better place, to refine the world. Now, we have a little cute cartoon here that oh, here it is. Oh, 1 second.
Looks pretty clumsy, doesn't it? Without this spacesuit, I can run, jump, spin, dance. Now, I'm barely able to lug forward. But with this spacesuit, I could walk on the moon, or on Mars, or just float about in outer space. Those dangerous cosmic rays wouldn't zap me. I get all the oxygen I need, and with these arms and gloves, I can still manipulate my surroundings. What you didn't know is that we need a spacesuit to walk on planet Earth as well. It's called a body. We need a personality, too. The way you think, the way you feel. But none of these things are really you. They're just the spacesuit. You need them so you can work down here in a physical reality. But the real you is a godly soul.
That's very cute. So here, the concept that we're discussing now is that the Kabbalah gives us a radically different approach to the soul. The common notion is that spirituality is a refuge. It's somewhere that enables us to get away from the daily grind of what we know as our day-to-day life. It enables us to move out of the mundane. It gives us something special beyond the existence that often becomes that can become stale, the existence of our lives, you know, the day-to-day things. Suddenly you have spirituality, the soul. It's a sanctuary of the woes of human experience. That's a common notion. It gives some people, it gives them the ability to flee the misery of day-to-day life. The Kabbalah comes and spins this whole concept on its head and says, on the contrary, the very purpose of spirituality is to transform the limitations of our physical domain. This is known in Hebrew as tikkun olam, repairing the world or transforming the world. The soul is not an escape button. On the contrary, it's an engage button. The soul is a gift that we have that enables us to actually change the very world we live in, to change the very existence of our lives. And understanding our role as transformers, understanding this unique role that the human soul gives every single one of us, and understanding the various levels of transformation, right? Nothing happens overnight. It's a level, it's a process, it's a journey. And ultimately, this gives us an understanding that our present function, where we are right now, our lives and our existence as it is directly related to what came before this physical existence of ours, and is also related to what will happen after our physical existence. We're just a chain, and something that happened before and something that's going to happen afterwards, part of this journey. And our part of this journey is accomplished by the refinement process that is enabled by this spiritual soul that is instilled within us. So, to use another analogy about this concept that I've been discussing, is to look at the soul as an interface of sorts, as a translator. What page are we on? We're on page 9. Right? The soul as an interface, the translator. So a simple example, so the soul basically serves as an interface between the physical and the spiritual. Let's look at text 6. Regina, please.
Oh, sorry. Maria speaks only Spanish. David speaks only English. They're incompatible. They each have information, life experience, and thoughts which they can give to others and receive from others. However, Maria and David cannot speak to each other. There can be a little interchange of knowledge, feeling, or experience. The inability to communicate may not bother you until you learn that David is Maria's grandson. The rich life of Maria is a close book to David. And David's exciting youth remains a mystery to Maria. She yearns to understand him but cannot. There is a language barrier. The solution is a translator. This is the purpose of an interface. A person who knows English and Spanish will be able to create a bridge between these two people who are so close but yet so far.
So this is what the soul serves as, a translator of sorts. See, the divine realm is representative of unity, of truth, of infinite life, light, of purity, and everything that's powerful in nature. The physical realm that we live in is a day-to-day struggle. It has limitations, it contains elements of falsehood and darkness. So, to dream of a world of perfection and a world at peace seems almost naive. It's simplistic. It's out of touch with reality. However, in comes the soul. And the soul is a pivotal point in creation. The human being is a cosmic interface. It's a combination of both the infinite and the finite, of body and soul, of earth and life source. It's the synthesis of these two ideas, and it brings them together. It's a synthesis of these two concepts, of the divine light and the infinite, with the finite and the struggles that define the world that we live in. And the key to success is synchronizing body and soul. So how does this work? How are we able to bring together these two seemingly opposing factors, and how are we able to actually affect the world in a positive way? What's the formula of synthesizing body and soul? Anybody have any idea?
Religious observance and prayer utilizes the body to express spiritual.
But praying on its own is a spiritual.
Doing good deeds.
Doing good deeds. We're getting food. That's a good thing.
You have to eat in order to be able to sing.
That's actually part of it. So far, everything, prayer, good deeds, food, these are all part of the formula.
Tshuva,
tzedakah, tefillah, right? All again. Question is that we know that the soul is we have these two factors. We have the infinite and the finite. We have the divine light, which represents beauty and unity and everything good. And then we have the reality of the world that we live in, which is concealment, which is struggle, which has darkness, which has negative elements. Now, the soul is ultimately meant to serve as the bridge. I mean, the human is meant to serve as the bridge between these two worlds. The soul and the body coming together ultimately is the synthesis of these two. But how do we, and this key is to synthesize them properly. So the question now is, how do we synthesize these two elements properly? We have these two elements within us. Some people are successful in synthesizing them. We know there are people that aren't. What is the key? How do we successfully synthesize these two elements and bring them together in order to positively affect first ourselves and then hopefully people outside of ourselves and hopefully a greater sphere in order to make this world a more positive, greater place? So the things that were brought up, prayer, good deeds, food as a component, there's different, and I'll explain how.
Charity.
Good. So the answer to that is ultimately by making sure that the body experiences the soul and recognizes what the soul really wants. Remember, the soul holds the key to divine purpose. So we have to kind of get closer to the soul, and it's in there, it's intangible, but we have to somehow try to feel it. We have to try to experience the soul on some level. And that's a very difficult thing to do, because it's intangible. You can't see it. You can't feel it. So how do you experience it? So the secret here, and this is what we're going to end tonight's class with, is to build awareness into our daily living. To build a certain level of awareness of our soul into our daily living. Because by building awareness of our soul into our daily living, ultimately, you're making sure that on a regular basis you experience the soul, which holds within it the key to purpose. So how do we do that? One method, again, it's not the only one, but one method is what's called a bracha, or a blessing. And I'll explain in a moment. Let's for a second go back to 5C. It's on page 8. Let's read it again, but this time, instead of looking at it as some kind of mystical text, let's look at it as a user's guide of sorts.
The human body was created from the lowest element, the inanimate. The reason for this is that the human carries out the ultimate purpose of creation. This purpose is the elevation of sparks of godliness that have descended into our world. We achieve this elevation through utilizing the various aspects of this world, for example, eating food and wearing clothes. And then the person serves God, and this service is made possible through the material objects of this world. In order to lift something properly, one needs to place their grip below the entire object. We see this clearly with a lever which is placed totally under the object one wishes to lift. So too, the material that God used to create man was of the lowest form, so that man could successfully lift it back to its source.
So, if we look at this as a user's guide to life, ultimately, this reading tells us that every physical element that we encounter in life, whether it's eating, whether it's sleeping, whether it's wearing clothes, whatever it may be, is an opportunity. It's an opportunity to uplift the physical, infuse it with spiritual, and thus transform the world in a positive way. So, the way that we activate the spiritually inherent element in every single physical particle, again, every single, let's go back to Maimonides for a second. Maimonides states that every single physical element of this world kind of has, just like a plastic plate is composed of billions of little atoms, can't see the atom, but we know it's there. Otherwise this plate wouldn't exist. So too, we can't see the divine spark that's found in this plate, but it's there. Otherwise it wouldn't exist. So the human has a unique ability to activate the divine spark within something as simple as a plate if you use it for a positive purpose. If I take this plate and I fill it up with soup and give it to a homeless person, I've activated the divine spark within this plate and I've suddenly given it purpose. If I use that same plate for a negative thing, I've lost that opportunity. Or even if I use it to feed myself soup, which gives me energy and enables me to be a good father. So life is full of little moments that a human is uniquely able to activate divine sparks and actually transform things in a positive fashion.
Could a negative spark be a positive spark in the sense that my understanding of it is that evil is in the world to provide us opportunities to do good. And so the idea that the evil is positive because it does give us that challenge and that choice that we're given. So would that not also be possible, that even if it is evil, it is still utilized and for us to do something?
Of course it's possible. Actually, transformation of evil into good ultimately is a higher purpose than taking something benign and transforming it for good purpose, because that, in essence, it's like lighting one little candle can disperse much darkness. You have a room full of darkness, all you need is one little candle and you can disperse a lot of darkness. So what you're saying is very true, absolutely. On the contrary, it's probably even a higher purpose, but that's something that's, you know, it's not as prevalent, and it's something that's much more difficult to do, and it's not common in your day-to-day life. We do encounter evil, but not, thankfully, not on a continuous basis. What we do encounter from the moment we wake up till the moment we go to sleep is what we call the gray area, something like a plate that can be used either for nothing or for something good or for something bad. That's something that's constant. And every single once in a while, a human does encounter evil. And when a human does come across that evil, those experiences, then we have a far greater opportunity to take that evil and transform it into good. So yes, the answer is yes. So, let's go now to text 7 on page 10. So before we read text 7, let's see what they have here. So we're talking now about a blessing. The blessing ultimately gives the ability to activate this divine spark. And The word in Hebrew for blessing is bracha. Bracha comes from the word ni, right? Birkayim. Anis, right? So, in essence, a bracha is similar to when a person kneels. You bend down, and the idea is to go below and uplift. It's blessing, the purpose is to draw godliness from the infinite and bring it down to our physical plane, to the finite, and uplift it. That's the purpose of the blessing. So our goal is to experience a bracha. And let's look for a second on the board. Questions for discussion. In your view, what would be the purpose of reciting a blessing, say, before eating? Would it be A, to thank God for the bounty? Would it be B, to recognize a deeper purpose of eating? Or C, to be God cognizant that God is creator of all? Based upon what we're discussing tonight, what would be the most, the central purpose of
recognize
B. B would fit into what, of course it's to thank God for the bounty, and of course it's to be cognizant of God is creator of all. But based upon what we've been discussing till now, it's to recognize a deeper purpose for eating. The transformative purpose. And as I just mentioned, the purpose is to draw down from the infinite, infuse it into the finite, and be able to uplift the physical elements in our very physical plane that we live in. So now let's look at text 7. Hold on.
If one eats fat meat and drinks spiced white wine, not out of physical desire, but in order to broaden the mind for the service of God and for His Torah, as Rabbah said, wine and fragrance make my mind more receptive. Or, in order to fulfill the commandment to enjoy the Shabbat and the festivals, then the vitality of the meat and the wine ascends to God like a burnt offering and sacrifice, for example. The life force that the food and drink contain is absorbed in sanctity.
So the physical ultimately enables us, right, eating food and drinking and living within the physical and enjoying the bounty that God gave us ultimately broadens the mind and makes us receptive to spirituality and positive action. As you know, a hungry person cannot think about anything other than his hunger. However, a person who eats and is well satiated is able to then think about spirituality. So that is, it's a progression. By us eating, by making it part of who we are, we're then able to uplift it and move forward. So now we're going to take a moment and go to page 11, and we're going to meditate on a bracha, a blessing. What is it and how does it activate this divine spark, and what is the real meaning or the spiritual underpinnings of a blessing? So we're going to break it down piece by piece. Right. First, we start with Baruch. Right. You have the chart there, which means drawing down. Okay. First, we're taking the infinite light. We're bringing it down. Hata, you. This is the way that God is totally above. He is above even having a name. It's just you. Even before we say His name, we have an up close and personal relationship with Hashem, or God. In other words, we're drawing down from the very highest level that don't even fall into the category of any name. And then we say the next word is Adonai. This is God's true name. Okay, it's the ineffable four letter word of God, name of God. Was and will always be, the four letters mark the flow of energy from the infinite to the finite. So again, we're progressing down from drawing down from a level that's beyond names. Now we're going to the highest level of God's names. Then we go to Elokeinu, the next level. This is the name of God which expresses the way that his power is felt in nature and in the world. In other words, this is going even a level further down. He is our God. We feel a personal connection to him. And then we go to Melech HaOlam. This is not one of the names of God anymore. This is just means the king of the universe. He is the king of Olam, of our world. But through this bracha, through our God-given choice, we draw light into the hiddenness of the world. And then finally, if, say, we're making the blessing on a cup of water or various other items, it would be Shahakol Nihiya B'dvaroi, right? Whose word all things came to be. This is the latent divine spark that now is released and revealed through this blessing. So a blessing is actually a meditational, it's a meditation. Going back a few steps, we have the ability to reveal the divine spark within all objects of the physical world we live in. But how do we get in touch with this deep ability that our soul has? And ultimately it's through meditation, through thinking, through recognizing and continuously being in touch with our soul and realizing that the soul has this ability to transform the world that we live in. And the way that we do that is by talking to the soul, in essence. A blessing is a meditation that gets us to think and communicate with the soul. That's what its purpose is. And the purpose, again, of this meditation, different from, say, meditation that you may be used to, or you may have read about or experienced previously, often the purpose of meditation is to transcend, to remove yourself from from a physical experience. But Judaism says no. The purpose of meditation, on the contrary, is not to transcend, but it's to engage. It's to change and transform. Meditation within Judaism allows us to become more engaged with the spirituality that's found within. There's no purpose there's no reason to go far, because it's inside of us, this spiritual light. And this enables us to, again, get in touch with our soul. So every time we engage in this bracha and the blessing, in this meditational of sorts, in essence, we're awakening within we're awakening our dormant soul within, and secondly, we're awakening the dormant spark that is found within the inanimate object. In our case, it would be a beverage, right? Because you're making a blessing on a beverage. And the Kabbalah stresses that every single moment in life has its opportunities. Wherever we are, whatever we're doing, there's an opportunity of positive transformation. It's always there. And even challenges pose an opportunity. Or that would be similar to what you mentioned before, Bruce. Negative things also give us an opportunity, sometimes a greater opportunity of transformation. And that ultimately is the purpose of the soul. The purpose of the soul is to serve as a powerful agent, enabling us on a constant basis to take the opportunities that come our way and make them count, make it meaningful, transform the world in a positive way. And this soul that gives us this incredible power is eternal. And ultimately, although it's been here way before, and it will be here way after, but during this short stay in this planet, we have the greatest opportunity to actually make a difference and affect change. Because a soul that is not engaged in a body, this same soul that's in our body now, before it came here, and when it's not going to be in this body anymore, it's going to be somewhere else, will not have that ability. It's only the soul in the physical body has these opportunities. And that is why it becomes important for us to recognize every opportunity and make every opportunity count, because this is an eternal soul, and where it's going to go afterwards, this opportunity won't be anymore. Where it was before, the opportunity wasn't here either. So next week we're going to be discussing where our souls actually came from. Where were you before you were born? But let's now do a quick recap, key points of tonight. Number one, our true self is not the body, but something beyond. It's the soul. Number two, everything has its unique design or program which defines and controls that thing. In living creatures, we refer to that design as the soul. The uniquely human soul is metaphysical and eternal. It has the ability to comprehend abstract ideas and to think about God. Number four, the human soul is a very spark of God. God created us in His image. The soul is the body to act as an interface between the spiritual and the physical. We are the translator between God and the world. And number six, this is reflected in the unique way man was formed. First, the body was formed from earth, and then the soul was infused into man from God's essence. We combine the lowest and the highest, earth and spark of God. Number seven, every moment in life is an opportunity to elevate the world and experience godliness. Number eight, a bracha helps us become aware of these opportunities and take advantage of them.
What happens to the soul of an animal?
Soul of an animal in a it definitely doesn't go to where we go. Its journey is something very different. But on the other hand, there is a soul, right? But it's of the lower level. So like when our bodies expire, when a person passes on, there's a certain level of the soul that is also ends right there. In a certain sense, the same thing happens to an animal. Do dogs go to heaven? It was a movie, wasn't it?
All dogs go to heaven.
You know, dog heaven is a
dog heaven.
A bone.
There's a movie with called Cold Souls.
Cold Souls?
And it talks about the soul as a physical property, and it's a very off the wall, strange movie.
Just imagine. So, are there any questions? First of all, I'd like to get some feedback. I've been talking for an hour and a half, and I need some feedback. And first of all, what do you think about this class in general? Any questions on tonight's topic in particular?
It made me look at things from a completely different point of view, and gave me, which is great. So that in itself is amazing. It's invaluable to me.
Well, good. And I hope that it will be a progression as we continue.
I think it's critically important, for those who want to understand, who we are, what we are, and why do we do things we do, why do we do things we do, how do we feel the way we do.
Well, is each person's soul unique to that person at the time when it's really in that person's body?
Yes. And I don't know how, I think in maybe the fifth lesson we're going to be discussing a little more about the anatomy of the soul itself. Because, again, it's just like there are different levels of souls. There are different souls and how they connect with each other. You know, there's even a concept in the Kabbalah that all souls emanate from Adam. So Adam was like the parent soul, and then from there it kind of broke off. So every soul on a certain level has a segment from the first man. But the way that its manifestation in your body is unique, absolutely. And if that soul ends up in a different body, or if it came from a different body, the way its manifestation in that body was unique as well.
Well, you have an infinite number of souls, or a limited number that keep on, you have to keep going to
doesn't have to, no. Usually, it's a soul will reincarnate according to the Jewish tradition only if it didn't complete its previous. So, in other words, there's a purpose and there's a goal. If a soul is not able to complete its goal within one lifetime, for whatever reason, then it has to complete it in the next.
So, a baby can be born with a completely new soul.
That's possible too.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think in our study also.
What you're saying is very true, and I think maybe I can rephrase. When I said talking to the soul, I wouldn't use, maybe the term was wrong. I think it's more about interacting with the soul. It has to be a two-way interaction.
A conversation. Very good point.
Yeah, it's a conversation. It's a two-way road.
We're often blocked from that calling, from that listening.
Through part of the process is meditation. By just, you know, meditating on the purpose and the spirituality that's inherent within, and experience. I think the major word here is experience. You have to experience it, and experiencing it comes many times with meditation, with actually affecting and doing good things. Ultimately, also gives us, you know, the ability to hear and to listen.
Does the animal part of us fight for the soul?
There is one level of the animalistic soul, right? There's the lower level, right, that expires with the body is called an animalistic soul. The animalistic soul naturally gravitates towards physical wants. It's instinctive. In other words, an animal soul wants to do what is instinctively embedded within us, and the spiritual soul, which is intelligence, has to override that sometimes. That is a unique component of a human that an animal doesn't have.
Right.
We're able to override instinct. Yeah.
We're also able to reason, and we're able to determine right from wrong. We may think our dog is the smartest dog in the world, but dog or cat doesn't really can't. Right,
right. Everything is instinct. Right. Now humans have the same exact instinct that an animal has. We have that same exact instinct. The only difference is that we have this spiritual soul that enables us to override instinct, because we can make decisions and decide what's right or wrong.
Well,
the idea of the bracha is kind of universal to different religions. There's men who thank God for his bounty, and for, like you say, thank God for this food which we're about.
Right. But our discussion tonight focused on the bracha being as not so much, of course, part of it is thanking God, but more importantly, the bracha is a tool
to get in touch with the soul.
Right. It's a meditational process.
Right.
In other words, pause, think, and think about what you're doing when you're about to eat. What's the purpose? It's not just right.
It's not just
to eat. There's a purpose. The purpose is to tap into.
Aren't other religions using it in that?
I'm sure.
I
skipped that class in yeshiva. I don't know. But I'm sure.
It's coming from the Jewish religion.
I learned
the bracha is like keeping you in touch with the purpose. Then when you're thanking God afterwards, it's like, now what do I do with this newfound energy and satiety? Now do I go take a nap, or do I go and do something positive? Yeah. And the other thing with the animal soul or the lower soul, if we have it, God gave it to us, then it's important to have. In other words, we need that survival instinct. We need that. We need to be, again. We need, if we are a vessel to bridge, okay, then we have to have that animal soul, because that keeps us connected to the physical. And then, like I say, like you said, the higher madriga, the higher soul, will keep us involved with, like, okay, this is important. Now, what do we do with it? So you keep it, but you can't. I don't want to diminish it in a way. It's like when it stays, it's because it serves its purpose. It's not that it's discarded. Does that make?
Oh, absolutely. Part of its purpose is that if we didn't have an animal side, then we wouldn't be able to be that bridge.
Right.
It's the very fact that we are animal creatures and we are spiritual creatures that we're able to bring it both together and in essence create something far greater. If we didn't have one or the other element, if we didn't have the animal element, we'd be angels. Angels can't accomplish too much. Right? If we didn't have the spiritual element, we'd be animals. Animals also can't accomplish too much. A human is the only creature in the whole cosmic existence that is able to actually bridge the two. And we discussed in a previous class last year, if you remember, this is precisely what it was a biblical class, we were discussing about why the snake specifically went after Eve. And the answer to that is because in addition to being a human, a female specifically has that compassion, right? And her entire a male is a conquering. The males always conquer, always want things to go their way. Females, on the contrary, they look at the world and they try to bring it all together, and you know, they're nurturers, right? Females are, women are nurturers. They naturally want to nurture and make the world kind of uplift it, which is the essence. In essence, a woman on a certain level is more in tune with the purpose of the soul than a male, because she's by nature a nurturer. She wants to change the world. She wants to change things and make them better, which is why in the biblical story, the snake went after her specifically. Because he recognized within her the great power that she had, more so than Adam.
Or maybe it was easier to convince her.
I'm not sure about that.
there's a movie years ago called A Stranger Among Us with Meg Ryan, and they talk about that the woman is exempt from certain things because they're already more in tune to things, and they're more the nurturer. They already want the uplifting, and that means, you know.
Well, yeah, according to the Kabbalah, women are on a higher spiritual plane than men.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, it's interesting because a lot of the little things that have like been bouncing around for years, you've given me, like, you know, filled in the gaps, so to speak.
The only beginning.
The whole thing about the bull being able, you know, because there's an Isaac Asimov Foundation trilogy I read years ago, and talks about how everything is connected, and yet you're an individual, and yet we're all connected,
right.
Even with the rocks and everything. And he must have read Kabbalah. It was good. But
Isaac Asimov was studied the Kabbalah.
Right. So the purpose, it's like realizing that we're connected because it's how that is used.
Right.
Just, you know, I don't know. I'm babbling.
No, absolutely.
Very.
My question would be, as a Catholic, who always do a blessing before and after meal, raised as a Catholic, does Kabbalism, is that correct?
No.
Kabbalah. Do they accept evolution in the scientific terms?
Evolution is definitely, it's a reality.
Okay.
But not exactly in scientific terms. In other words, the fact that the world evolved over time is, there were dinosaurs, there were different creatures that came and went and things happened, right?
Mm-hmm.
The question, the ultimate problem that Judaism has with evolution is that And again, if anybody wants to, you don't have to stay this out of the scope of this class, but I'll answer the question anyway.
Okay.
The basic problem that Judaism has with evolution is that Darwin's concept was that all forms of life came from the same spring, okay, to use an analogy. The fact that you have survival of the fittest, that's a reality. Right? The fact that we had creatures in times gone that are not around today, it's a reality. Even the Torah tells us that Noah inevitably looked different than we do today. He evolved. They needed to grow things, or his fingers grew, and things happened. The problem that we have is that the source, according to Darwin, the source of all living creatures came from the same place. Now, the second that we agree with that, I mean, taking it to an extreme, then why, what's the difference if there was a person's dog was drowning and a kid was drowning, why would you save the kid over the dog? If they all come from the same life source. However, if we recognize that the human is unique, and the human has a higher form of life that we discussed tonight, a soul, something that defines it and places it above that dog, then obviously we have a reason not to say the human over the dog. So in a very simplistic, very quick way of answering that question, ultimately, the realities of, at least some realities of evolution, are irrefutable. It's the concept behind it that ultimately Judaism just can't agree with. Well, I wouldn't say God created evolution. I would say that God created the world in such a fashion that it evolves over time. Yeah, it's the same thing.
God created everything. God created science. God created the physical, universe. I have a way of you can explain things many ways, and that doesn't necessarily mean it's not a miracle. In other words, when man became self-aware, was when God breathed the neshama into him. Okay, so whether that came from the moment the brain developed, that moment of awareness of sentience, that man became sentient, is the moment that God breathed the soul into man. Okay, so it's not, to me, it's not mutually exclusive. And it's still, the demarcation is there. It's not,
Well, Maimonides is very clear. He says that science and spirituality cannot contradict each other. He says.
Right.
Doesn't say they do not. He says they cannot.
Right.
That's Maimonides.
That makes perfect sense. Yeah. That's what we've been talking about.
Anyway. Thank you for joining us. I look forward to seeing everybody next week.